step up to the microphone. Say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to The Bunker, everybody. It's March 22nd, and for those of you who like to play with numbers, 322. 3 times 22 is 66.
That's right.
And this being 2006, one could say it's a hidden 666.
That is correct, because in numerology, occult numerology, the zeros drop out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they like these hidden numbers. They like to play around that way.
Yeah, they do. So, you know, if your head's needed a good spin, just want
there
to throw
it is.
That in
yes.
for you.
1900 hours bunker standard time. Of course, that's 0200. It's 0100 Greenwich mean. We've got a time change coming up, and I'll have to go back and recalculate.
Now, are we going to do the time change on schedule? Remember they were talking about switching the dates for the time changes?
Yeah, but I don't think that was going to happen until 07.
That didn't fly. Huh?
I think it is, but I don't think it's going to be until 07.
Ah, well, we'll see.
Can't rush into these things.
No, you don't want to rush into them.
We're reticent. We've got part two of our interview with Janet C. Phelan coming up tonight, and that has generated an awful lot of talk, comment on the PID forum.
And really interesting, you know, very insightful. The people on our forum and the people who write to us, the people who listen to us, you guys are smart.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you send us really thoughtful, suggestions and comments. And we had a chance, Derek had a chance to talk with Janet this evening, and he asked her a couple of things.
One of the main questions that popped up, and in fact, this is from a new member of the forum who happens to be an employee of the Los Angeles Department of Power and Water.
And we're not going to say anything more
than that,
because we
right.
don't want to get him into trouble. But his note was really, I thought it was great.
Yeah, which is basically, how do you power something like this?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're talking about these T-valves in the street that have to be switched on, switched off, supposedly by remote, you're looking at a lot of pressure, and you're looking at a pretty big valve. Think about the amount of effort it takes firemen to open a hydrant, and you get an idea of the type of size and water pressure that you're dealing with when you're talking about some of these valves for water mains.
Right.
So that is an important question, and that is something that we are going to check out, and Janet is continuing to check out. The other question raised by one of our regular forum members was, where does the power come from to power these valves?
Yeah.
Clearly, these are not battery operated, and in the picture, it's not clear, the pictures that Janet was able to take, it's not clear that you've got power running to the valves under the street. My thought was, what if that second conduit, that second line that she saw on the blueprints under the street, were not actually to introduce the
agent.
Additive, the agent, but was actually a power conduit for running power to these valves.
Yeah, well, she's looking into all of this, and you know, don't assume that because she has a stance that she is locked into this only. Mm-hmm. She's still trying to find the truth. Ultimately, she's a truth seeker.
Right, and she's got she's an investigative reporter with some pedigree, so she is doing her research and is continuing her work. In fact, as we'll talk, as we continue this interview, you'll hear her discuss some of the projects that she's working on to try to get this information out into the public. The thing that really sticks and raises a red flag, or a yellow flag at least, is the reluctance of the top engineers in the Department of Power and Water to discuss this issue. I mean, if all they're doing is updating old valves and old lines under the street, what's the big deal? Why deny that these valves are even being used when all it takes is a brief search on the internet to find out that, yes, these valves are produced. Yes, the company who's supplying the material does stock and sell this type of valve.
Mm-hmm.
And playing little games like the woman who was the top engineer there in asking Janet to draw a picture of one of these valves so she would know what one looked like just seems really silly. So anyway, we'll discuss that a little further in just a couple of minutes. Meanwhile, other things in the news.
You know, there was a guy who was arrested today for throwing a harmless package at the White House. Mostly harmless.
I guess freedom of expression, freedom of speech doesn't cover that.
Well, apparently this guy has a history of doing this.
throwing harmless packages?
Uh-huh.
What was in the package?
You know, I'm not even sure. They just said it was harmless. It may have been a copy of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
And fluffy puffed marshmallows.
But it was enough to get everybody up in arms and the Secret Service out in full regalia this afternoon. They sent a robot in to check out the package, and all the reporters were herded into a special room in the White House. The White House was not evacuated. Mm-hmm. President Bush wasn't there. So it was just, I guess, one of those things. It was a big show.
Mm-hmm.
It was all over the news. I watched it.
Interesting. Keeps things, it's the kind of day that news reporters just thrive. They live for.
It was so funny looking at them, though, because these were the reporters who normally do their stand-ups outside the Washington.
Mm-hmm. Wendell Goller,
exactly.
Jim Engel, guys
exactly.
Like that.
Mm-hmm. All those guys. Well, they were there. Ready to deliver their reports and getting everything together, and they were shoved into the briefing room there in the White House, and you saw pictures of them standing over by the window, and they were huddled, you know, about a dozen of them just all huddled together trying to peek, like at a parade, mm-hmm. trying to peek out the window and see what was going on.
Can you see something? No.
No, do you see anything? Huh. But this window stinks.
Well, speaking of police activity and police actions, the BBC has reported on a question that is being asked now in the wake of the killing of an unarmed doctor in Virginia. This is a story from yesterday's Watcher magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I haven't heard discussed on American news, but I think it's a question worth asking. Apparently, this doctor was killed as he was coming out of his home, his townhouse, to meet an undercover police officer who wanted to question him. There was an accident, a gun was discharged, and the doctor was shot and killed. Now, why did this happen? How did this happen? I mean, accidents do happen, but sometimes the conditions have to be present for accidents to turn deadly. When the undercover officer went to meet this doctor, he was accompanied by the SWAT team.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that seems like overkill to me. Not to pardon the pun, I don't mean it to be. But the point made by the article is that the SWAT teams, which used to be used only in extreme circumstances in the past, are now being used on a fairly routine basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we mentioned this briefly yesterday, but I think you're absolutely right. This is an article that deserves more airtime, and it deserves I hope there's going to be a big investigation over this.
Mm-hmm.
Because apparently police departments, I don't know if they're given, I'm not really sure if they get federal money. I know that there has been federal money to hire new police officers.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big deal about putting, what was it, an additional 100,000 police officers on the street or something like mm-hmm. that some time back. And I assume that money that comes in is earmarked, and maybe part of that was earmarked for SWAT teams. Maybe they've got these SWAT guys that they have to use. And if that's the way it is, then that's just ate up.
Yeah, I don't know, but apparently they're being used more and more often on fairly routine police missions. Going to discuss, you know, going to talk with an optometrist with no history of violence at his home.
Optometrists are mild-mannered people.
Not like former postal employees.
I worked
employees.
With optometrists in the wild there in Bloomington, Indiana. And
right.
I observed their habits, and they are mild-mannered.
Yes. Sharon speaks with experience. She works at the School of Optometry. Yeah. She can talk them down when they get into situations that even the police can't handle.
That's right.
So, look, does it look better here or here?
Number one or number two?
But, well, we need to ask your forgiveness, because this is not a funny situation, because, again, this gentleman was coming out of his home, had no reason to be concerned for his life or his safety, and because the SWAT team was there with guns trained and an accident occurred, somebody mm-hmm. accidentally discharged a handgun, 2 months ago, the doctor was killed. And his family now is left to ask why. But I think as American citizens, we need to step back and say, why are the special weapons and tactics units being sent out on routine police missions like this?
I want to know why he was meeting an undercover policeman.
Well, according to the article, he'd been under investigation for illegal gambling. Okay.
And I'm not blaming him. I'm just wondering, is there more to the story?
Well, it's possible, but the story that's been released is that the SWAT team went out in order to serve a search warrant on this doctor because it's police policy on organized crime raids.
Mm-hmm.
And because he was suspected of illegal gambling, the warrant was being served in accord with their policy on organized crime. So the SWAT team went out and tragedy occurred.
Mm.
So, but again, the point is that the SWAT teams are being deployed in routine cases now, and it leads one to wonder exactly why. What is the purpose for it? Is it just to justify the budget, or is it to get us used to, Americans used to seeing guys in black body armor with automatic weapons on the streets?
Yeah, well, that could be it, because with all of the cop shows that have been on over the last 10 years that show that,
mm-hmm.
it's almost as if the SWAT team isn't called out, then are the police really doing anything?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, this is a totally different story, but we've also got a story on Watcher Today that comes out of North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a defector from North Korea who says that there is a practice in place that kills newborn babies that are disabled. According to the defector, a man named Ri, R.I., he says the practice is encouraged by the state as a way of purifying the masses and eliminating people who might be considered different.
Hmm. Well,
This is eugenics. This is the kind of stinky thing we've been talking about.
Yeah.
And it gets back to that notion that, oh, you know what, they're
quality
not going to have
of
a
life.
Full life. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, they're only so old, they're not going to even know. They don't feel pain.
Hearing this story, our first reaction might be, well, that's North Korea. That's evil. Remember, however, that it was just last year that a court in England gave doctors the right to stop treating an infant, a newborn with spina bifida, I believe,
mm-hmm.
whose parents did not want her to die, but the doctors made the decision that it was better because of her quality of life,
mm-hmm.
if she had been allowed to survive. She's not going to live that long anyway. She's not going to have the quality of life that a normal mm-hmm. human mm-hmm. should have. And the judges ruled in favor of the doctors over the wishes of the parents. We also have the cases from Europe where doctors are admitting there, I believe it was Holland, and forgive me if I'm wrong.
That sounds right.
Netherlands, yeah.
Where
doctors have admitted that, yes, we've been euthanizing infants born with birth defects
mm-hmm.
for years, even mm-hmm. though it's not legal to do so. They've been making that judgment call.
Right. There's such a fine line between that, and I don't agree with that at all.
No.
I used to work with handicapped kids, and some of those kids, I mean, they were able to do things that you would never have expected them to achieve. And I worked with Special Olympics for years.
Mm-hmm.
I find this hideous.
Yeah.
And it's a fine line to cross to get to, oh, you know what? He's just a little shorter than I hoped he was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to be that basketball player we were hoping for. Or, you know what? We were really hoping for a blonde.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is not much further beyond that to... Well, let's go ahead and say it. It's not much further than that to a woman's right to choose.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, you know where we stand on that particular issue. We're not going to beat a horse that's, you know, if not dead, is at least on life support. But you're right. Eugenics is not dead. And here in our 21st century world, we can look back on that as a relic of a bygone era. But eugenics, the killing, the disposal of those that are less than perfect or from undesirable classes or races is not dead.
That's true.
Not dead.
Well, we need to talk about this voting thing in Texas. Because
yeah,
this story, I think, is something that you and I are going to end up doing another show on.
Mm-hmm. The story from today,
I've got two stories on Watcher Magazine. One's a flashback, but the one from today, Texas electronic vote halted due to machine errors. Apparently, they weren't printing out all of the receipts that they should have, the actual documents for a recount later.
Mm-hmm.
These are handheld devices, or they're very small. They're called, was it Eastlate? Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're made by a company called Heart Intercivic. And that sort of rung a bell for me. So I did a little research and I found an older article dating back to 2004 that actually is relative to Ohio and Texas. So this first story is from Texas. The second one, the flashback story, is from Texas and Ohio. Mm-hmm. And again, it's Heart Intercivic, and it's a story written by someone who had received letters from a whistleblower that mm-hmm. had worked for Heart Intercivic. And it talks about how the company was well aware of the problems with their Eastlate, but they had no qualms about, you know, fulfilling the contracts that they had in place with many, many states mm-hmm. And just sending defective equipment out for these elections.
Yes, defective.
Yes, defective.
Quote, unquote.
And what really bothers me, I did a little more research on it tonight, and I discovered that Heart Intercivic is part of an overall company mm-hmm. called Accenture. Accenture, some of you may recognize that, mm-hmm. is the new name for Arthur Andersen.
Yes, late of Enron.
Yeah, our
interesting.
Friends.
So their fingers are still in the political game and messing up these elections in Texas, where they found that the vote was as much as 20% off between what was counted on Monday and what was reported on election night. That's huge.
That's huge. That is a huge amount. A lot of people don't win by 20%.
No, rarely do you get candidates winning by 20%, especially when you get into larger offices mm-hmm. at the national level in any way. Anyway, but the fact that they knew about this problem a couple of years ago and last year anyway, and months went by without anyone in the company mm-hmm. contacting the whistleblower, or the secretaries of state from Texas or Ohio contacting
yeah.
this whistleblower
yeah.
indicates that somebody either just doesn't care or they've been told not to care.
Well, that's sadly probably what it
yeah.
is.
And of course,
been told not to care.
As you remember, Ohio played a key role in the 2004 election.
It did.
Were these used in Ohio in 2004? I don't know.
I don't know. I'm going to continue doing the research.
Yeah.
If anyone out there is aware of the answer, we'd love to hear from you. You can always send us a note at radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
I
had one more story I was going to bring up, but go ahead.
Okay, well, I've got one, too, that relates to voting, but this is overseas. Belarus,
mm-hmm.
the incumbent Alexander Lukashenko, who is routinely portrayed in the press as a dictator, won re-election. However, Scott McClellan, the spokesman for the president, said that the United States does not accept the results of the election. We support the call for a new election. Gee, this sounds like Ukraine's Orange Revolution all over again.
I know it. That's why I put this story in here.
Yeah.
First of all, where is it? When is it up to us? To say, oh, no, we don't accept your election. You're going to have to hold another one.
Yeah.
Because we don't like the result.
Well, did you see, you know, Belarus saying, hey, 2004 election, we don't accept your results, Mr. Bush, so we want the United States voters to go back to the polls. Or in 2000 with the full mess in Florida. Well, yeah, this happened in Ukraine. It happened in Georgia, Kyrgyzstan, mm-hmm. and it's happening in Belarus. And I would bet that if we did a little digging, we would find that George Soros' Open Society Initiative is active and operating inside Belarus, just like they were and are in Ukraine uh-huh. and Georgia and Kyrgyzstan.
Yep, yep.
Funded by the U.S. Department of State, and I still just am amazed that isn't a big deal in the American press.
Well, the question is, why do we want our man or woman in Belarus?
Well, because Belarus borders on Russia. It's also part of the key strategic area of the 21st century, Central Asia,
mm-hmm.
like Ukraine, like Georgia, like Kyrgyzstan,
like
it is strategically important
yeah.
to the oil-producing region of the Caspian, and because it serves as a buffer against Russia.
Mm-hmm.
We want our guys in there, and of course Putin and the Russian government wants their guys in there. Lukashenko is pro-Russian, so it's a tug of war.
You know, this reminds me, we're going to end up going long tonight because of this, but you were reading yesterday about the oil bourse, you know, possibly opening mm-hmm. up, and of course it didn't.
Right.
And it was supposed to have coincided with the new year
in
Persia,
Iran. Mm-hmm.
In Iran. And it was going to be located on a small island.
Called Kish Island, yeah.
This is a tiny island, and it lies very close to...
Well, it's in the Persian Gulf, directly across from the United Arab Emirates.
Yes, very close to Dubai.
Mm-hmm. Yep, right across the Gulf.
Yep.
It is a vacation spot. There's something like 45 hotels on this island, even though the airport, the international airport, is about half the length of the island.
Yeah, this island must be just solid hotels.
It is pretty much, but it looks like a very beautiful area. The pictures make the beaches and the waters around it look beautiful. But and it is a duty-free zone, so, of course, you can go there and buy and trade. And that's where they're going to put the bourse.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to open. Technical glitches have slowed it down. They say it may be 6 months, a year before they get it started.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting that they happen to be locating this within a stone's throw, probably a long tee shot from Abu Dhabi.
Mm-hmm. Well, one last story to, cheer you up if you're having a bad day. Just thank the Lord that you don't live in Orlando. Now, Orlando is normally associated with wonderful things, you know, Disney World.
Yeah.
You know, Universal. It's a great, I've been there a couple of times. I love Orlando. Mm-hmm. Got a cousin who lives there. I should call her up and find out if she's running into these problems because birds are dropping their droppings all over everything.
Really?
There's a picture with this story of a car that is covered.
Oh!
I just turned and showed the picture to my husband. Signs warning of bird droppings were posted along a stretch in downtown Orlando this week after cars, benches, sidewalks, plants, and even people are hit and covered by white bird waste.
Oh, that is gross.
You gotta wonder why so many birds are dropping in. According to James Taylor, a local resident, he says you have to brace yourself for the smell.
I don't doubt it. I mean, you know, I thought...
It just brings to mind that one scene in High Anxiety where Mel Brooks is running through the park and the birds, which of course is a symbol, you know, the takeoff from... It's a whole takeoff on Hitchcock movies.
Mm-hmm.
And his trench coat is covered by the time he gets out of there.
Right.
You know, I'm sure if we were living in Orlando, we would not be laughing about this. But,
No. You
know, it's just, it's an odd story, and I just wish them well. I pray that the birds...
Is this an annual thing, or is this something that's just unusual to this year?
I don't think so.
Wow.
The problem began when city workers removed cypress trees on Bird Island.
Oh, see, you mess with the natural balance of things.
Yeah.
And so now they're saying, okay, they're getting their revenge.
Well, it says here the trees had to be removed because the bird droppings were polluting the water. So now the birds have moved. The birds have moved into the city.
This is much better.
So to our listeners in Orlando, we're praying for you. Bless your hearts.
Oh, boy.
Park in the garage if you can.
Yeah. Well,
Let's we need to go to part two.
Take a moment, yeah. Well, we need to transition back to a topic that's that is very serious and relates to a possible attempt, a possible plan that is underway to, well, eliminate
to possibly
large,
do harm to some people.
Large,
you know,
portions
in a
of the American
city.
Public, yeah.
Yeah.
So without further ado, let's continue now with part two of our interview with investigative reporter Janet Phelan.
We ended yesterday by talking about the existence of a second line to deliver a chemical or a fluid of some sort in conjunction with these valves that our guest Janet Phelan has documented in her area, which is the Los Angeles area. Janet, as you said yesterday, in order for the water system to be tampered with, there has to be some way of selectively introducing a chemical. How did you find out about this second line?
Well, I knew there would have to be a second line because obviously it's not just going to come in a bolt from, you know, from Hades, so to speak. There has to be a second line. And when I was initially researching this, I was hanging around a work crew around the Washington La Brea. Those are two streets in the midsection of Los Angeles. And I had come across the work being done there. And I was just hanging around the street crew for a couple weeks, you know, just kind of, you know, talking to the guys and, you know, trying to find out what they're doing and asking them questions. And, you know, that's how I found out that they were remote controlled. And at one point, there was a foreman on the work site. He was an employee of LADWP, not the contracting company, which was Spinello. And I just said, hey, I'd love to see those blueprints. He said, oh, got them in my truck. So he pulled them out. I pulled them out, and I started looking at them page after page. And page after page, we have a second line. Now, it was set up exactly as I thought it would be. Now, I asked him, I said, what is the second line for? He said, it's a conduit, you know, just to carry water, you know, great distances. And I said, look carefully at the blueprint. From that conduit, every few yards, we have an access line onto that first line. I said, what is that about? And he looked very puzzled. He said he had no idea. And I believe he had no idea. I don't think these, I mean, I know that these street workers have no idea that they're setting up a Holocaust machine. They are good, decent laborers. They are fixing the water system, you know, so that it can be done more efficiently, and that's all they know. So at that point, I tried to take some photographs, and my photographs didn't come out really well. However, this year, actually just about a month ago, I located another site, which is around 8th Avenue and about Vermont and Normandy, which is another part of the midsection of Los Angeles. And once again, I go out there, you know, start, you know, schmoozing the crew. And there was a fellow there who was very friendly, and I told him I was a reporter. I'm doing, you know, a story on infrastructure work, and we chatted a little bit. And I said, you know, I'd love to see the blueprints. He says, hey, they're in the truck. And he said that this guy was operating the forklift. He says, hey, go in the truck, get her the blueprints. So I sat down. I had two cameras with me. And I had my cell phone camera as a backup, and I also had a standard camera. And I started just snapping like crazy. And I got about 10 or 12 photographs before that fellow on the forklift became alarmed. Mm-hmm. And he got off the forklift and came towards me and said, well, you know, we're living in very strange times. Oh, we got some people coming by here. Just one second. Noisy. He said, we're living in very strange times, and I don't know who you are, and I don't know why you're taking these photographs. And immediately I took my cameras and stuffed them, you know, in inaccessible places and pockets and so forth, and I handed the blueprints back to him. I said, I don't want to get you worried. I said, I don't want to get you in trouble, and I don't want to get you worried. Here, take the blueprints back. I already had enough photographs, you know, to pretty much satisfy what I felt that I needed to do. So I hung around a little bit longer. I didn't want him to get worried. I didn't want him to start thinking he wanted to take my cameras away. And I talked with him a little more, and I said, just jokingly, I said, you know, you're right to be concerned. I said, actually, I am Osama bin Laden. I said, they shrunk me and gave me a sex change. Isn't it a great cover? And he laughed. And, you know, he was a little more at ease. And actually, some of the, he was just, you know, basically an operator, a machine operator. But the foreman showed up, and he said, hey, look, we got Osama bin Laden here. And it was a big joke. So it was okay. You know, it was okay. I got my photographs. And I have had those developed. And those photographs, one of them I basically published on some Yahoo groups. So those photographs are available for others to see. And we have those second lines. Those second lines appear to be in every single photograph. Now, there are some peculiarities to the photographs that and the blueprints that are other peculiarities that are kind of alarming. On one section of the street, we have the second line suddenly stopping. It just stops, and it seems to have disappeared for a block, and then a block later, it starts up again. So the blueprints are questionable. I would like very much to get a non-DWP engineer to look at the blueprints and explain to me how lines can stop in the middle of the street, because it doesn't really make sense. And there's some very peculiar things going on here, but we do have those second lines that appear to be just about everywhere. Now, I was out in Ali Sabuni's office again just about a week ago, asking him some more questions, getting them on tape, et cetera. And I asked him point blank, I said, are these blueprints complete? because we have lines stopping in Elizabeth Street. You know, just things that just don't make much sense to me. And he's looking real nervous at me. He just doesn't seem to want to talk to me too much. And he's mumbling a lot, and I'm trying to get him to speak loudly enough so it will record. And he says, well, to my knowledge, they're complete. Now, that is not a direct affirmative.
No.
No.
And he also, you know, states, to his knowledge, LADWP does not use remote-controlled water valves. Well, 2 weeks earlier, in a recorded conversation, he stated definitively that there is no such thing as a remote-controlled water valve. So he's beginning to backpedal a little bit. You know, and now it's to his knowledge. It's not a definitive matter of fact that remote-controlled water valves are not used and do not exist. So, you know, he's a very... he's a careful man.
Is there any other purpose that that second line might solve? Some sort of backup system for, say, aging water lines that are probably going on, 70, 80 years old now?
Well, you know, that's very possible. That's very possible. And, you know, that would basically, they would be duplicating the system. At this point in time, the cover story for what they're doing with this, at least in L.A., is the cement relining project. So what they're doing is they're going in and relining all the pipes. And while they're doing it, they're replacing all these valves on the T's and the crosses with remote-controlled valves. Now, if they, and they have been doing this for at least 20 years, possibly 30. I'm within the next week, I will have it nailed down as to how long they've been working on this, at least here in L.A. So basically, they're retrofitting the pipes. They're making the pipes, you know, stronger and better. So why do they need double pipes? I don't know. I mean, it's a possibility. However, with these T's and crosses and the valves, with the access lines off that one line onto the other line, it becomes a real question. And given the fact that they're lying about the valves that have the capabilities to provide mixtures, which they are obviously setting up systems that will do that with the T's and the crosses and the valves on them, they're lying about that. So the fact remains that they appear to be covering up information about the capability of providing a mixture into the water system. Now, when you look at 817 again, and you're talking about delivery systems and toxins and protective poisoning, then you begin to wonder, you know, what is really going on. And the fact is, and I will make this very clear, I had to reason backwards in order to understand this system, because I had already been tipped off that this was in play. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it took quite a bit of footwork to figure out, you know, because I don't have a plumbing background, you know, what are valves, what are certain kinds of valves, what are gate valves, what are T valves, what are crosses, what are fittings. And the lies are about the capabilities of providing a mixture. And given the fact that this is a selective targeting system, it is a weapon of mass destruction, but it is selective, given the fact that I have now two reports from people who have been targeted with this.
Now, when you say you were tipped off, was this prior to ever looking into this at all?
Absolutely.
I know you had worked for a local newspaper.
Absolutely.
So this is, do you think, my understanding is you lost your job.
I
may have been connected to this in some way.
I left my job. I quit my job when the editor of the Santa Monica Daily Press, hours after I walked into City Hall requesting water records, I got a call from Carolyn Zachariasen, and she told me that I was not to ask these questions. She did not authorize me to ask these questions, and she stated I was endangering her position in the city of Santa Monica by asking questions about water. I quit.
That seems really odd.
Doesn't it?
I would think that as a reporter, when anything goes on with infrastructure in your city, especially post 9/11, it's a story. Therefore, why can't you go investigate it?
Well, investigative reporting is not it is not encouraged as much as it was 20, 30 years ago. There was very little funding for investigative reporting, and that is because apparently it is not a top priority of newspapers. There is I believe that there is a perception of danger concerning this particular project because it is a targeting project, because it can target selectively, possibly people in the media might feel that if they got too close to the truth on certain subject matters, it might happen to them.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've referred to several...
I'm simply hypothesizing. I can't get inside of other people's heads.
Well, exactly, and I know that our listeners are out there and wheels are turning in their minds as well. You mentioned your website a number of times. Could you repeat that for today's listeners?
Right. The article itself is on a number of different websites, and the title of the article is Public Extermination Project. And if you simply Google the title, you will be able to view the article. Some of the websites have it in its entirety, and some only have, you know, just the text and not the documents or just the photos or something. One other thing I want to say about this that is also supportive. Very recently, I believe about a month or two ago, up in Oroville, which is in Northern California, the emergency services part of the government ran a drill. It was called Operation Silver Lining, and it was a drill about a possible scenario of terrorists poisoning the water supply.
Now, where was this located again?
Oroville.
Just how far from Santa Monica?
Oh, it's in Northern California.
Oh, okay.
So now what I want to say about this, to make this very clear, this is a federal project. This is not a Los Angeles system that is only going to target people in Los Angeles. This is a federal project which appears to have been set up just about everywhere. This is a depopulation system. It has cost billions of dollars to retrofit the country this way. The country has been retrofitted for death.
So you're saying that you have information that this is a project that is not just being undertaken in the Los Angeles area, but it is being done in other areas as well?
Yes. Yes, I have people now emailing me from all over the country. They're seeing this work going on in their neighborhoods. And as it is apparently being authorized under 817 of the Patriot Act, which is federal law, it's not California law. And since they're, you know, if they're interested in depopulating and doing it in a sense of targeting, you know, particular groups, either ethnic or religious or political, then they would want most likely to target them in all states of the union.
Do you think this has been tested out yet?
As I said, when you say tested out,
if the infrastructure is there to do this, the best way to find out if it's really going to work is to run a very small test.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as I can tell from the two reports that I've had of this being deployed against individuals, that could have been considered a test.
Well, I guess in a way it's hard to know. If it can target an individual house, then someone may, you know, pass away and it will just be written off to something seeping up through the ground or something he or she ate. Or
natural causes.
Yeah.
Natural causes, actually, because what this does is whatever toxin that is being used creates cardiac distress. And those are the reports I'm getting. And if somebody dies of a heart attack, well, you know, happens all the time.
Yeah, Slobodan Milosevic.
Yeah.
Right. You know, heart attacks, strokes kind of fall under the same you know, category of similar body systems becoming, you know, problematic. There have been some of the attacks. Well, attacks. That's stating some of the deaths of scientists in the last few years. There have been. There's been a rash of unexplained deaths, some one car accidents, some, mm-hmm. You know, a few heart attacks, mm-hmm. on scientists who were working on sensitive programs. And
we had that list. We had that list on our website.
Right, right. And some of them did die of heart attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what this system does. Actually, as you know, Barry Chalmers recently suffered a small stroke.
Right. We spoke with him last weekend.
Uh-huh.
Right. I spoke with him, too, and he stated some perception that this might not have been natural.
That's very, very fishy in light of the fact that he was saying Sharon's may not have been natural.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
well, this heart attacks are almost the easiest thing to produce in someone, and one of the ways they can do it is through the system.
What is this substance? I mean, I know that the intelligence agencies have been working on this for years, you know, means of introducing poisons that are, or toxins that are undetectable by standard screens to induce stroke or heart attack. Do you have any information on what this substance that is that might be introduced?
I do not. I have attempted. I have samples of the problem. I have brought the samples to labs. I have called labs. I have requested this be tested, and almost universally, I have been told they will refuse to test the water sample. The one lab that agreed to test this. There was some unusual activity around my going to the lab to bring the sample. I had gone to a transit center where a number of buses come in. I had a satchel with my water samples. I was approached by someone whom I'd never seen before who asked me if I were a freelance writer. I said, no, ma'am, I'm just a tourist. And she insisted I was a reporter, and then she also started making comments about my poetry. Actually, I do write poetry. My first book was published last year. It's called The Hitler Poems. It's available on Amazon.com. So obviously, somebody I didn't know knew something about me. Now, that woman at that point, I was at a transit center. She said, so you're taking the number 7 bus. Well, you know, there were 4 or 5 buses that came in there. Actually, it was the number 7 that would have taken me to the lab.
Oh.
So I was made. Now, by the time I got to the lab, there were some peculiar things going on there, and I was told that a universal test, if you don't know what you're testing for, it's going to be thousands and thousands of dollars, which I, you know, fans job and et cetera, mm-hmm. you know, could not actually come up with that. So we agreed to test for arsenic, which came out a negative. However, I found out later on that there is a particular test. I believe it's called electronic spectrography or something. Anyway, it will give you an idea of what range of toxins you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told that because that the fact that that test exists and could greatly narrow the range and therefore greatly narrow the cost, that was not offered to me was highly suspicious.
Yeah.
So that was my big testing experience.
Hmm. Do you have white vans parked in front of your house a lot?
At one point, yes, but no longer. No. I have actually had some very unusual level of retaliation against me in the last couple of years. So there are no more white vans in front of the house.
Well, you
there's
know, the
no
more
you can
go on record.
There's no more house. So.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I had my assets seized. My apartment, my bank account was seized. My inheritance, which was considerable, has been blocked. So there's no more house.
Well, Janet,
there's a lot of couch surfing these days.
We will break there, and we'll discuss a little bit more as to who might be responsible for some of these retaliatory moves as we continue our interview with Janet Phelan on Operation, the Public Extermination Project, rather, and we will do that as PID Radio continues tomorrow.
Well, that is the end of part two, and we do have a third part to that, so if you have any questions about, you know, what she's told us so far, you can certainly, you know, post a comment to this PID Radio show, but you can also send us a note again. Always send us a note at radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
That's right. You can check the show notes. The show notes are at pidradio.com, and our forum, which is a great group of people who exchange ideas and usually refrain from throwing things at one another, peeringintodarkness.com/forum.
Oh, well, what a great show. I'm still thinking about the birds thing.
We had it all in there today.
We did.
Well, we look forward to the conclusion of our interview with Janet Phelan tomorrow, and I guarantee that we'll be talking with her again in the future. Make sure you're here for part three tomorrow. And until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Have a great evening, everybody.
Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it.